kind of with his hand, but a corner of that plastic brochure holder was able to hit the top of his forehead. And why this was going on and they were trying to get him out of the restaurant, my mother was calling the police, telling them to come in because she was scared that he was going to harm my father or do something even worse. Then he left on his own, went to a pool place down the street where he's known for keeping his belongings and hanging out there. Police came and apprehended him and interviewed my parents. A few days later, we're looking at pulling up a report we find a report in the news about a man attacking a restaurant employee and yelling, "Go back to your country, you Arab," and terrorist, and bashing him on the head with a pipe, which obviously it wasn't a pipe that he was bashing in, and there was really no bashing that was done.
How did the media get they just looked at the court documents, do you think? They make an attempt to talk to your parents about what happened?
They talked to them a little bit, but a lot of what they put down was what Jason Kendall said himself. He saw Saddam Hussein looking man and a woman wearing clothing that was a signal, and that he wanted to free her. So it was basically all the information was taken out of a police report, which the news also highlighted in the headlines.
Well, and one of the things that you pointed out that wasn't reported in the news is that Jason Kendall is actually known to your parents and is a houseless individual that they had helped before, like other houseless people in the neighborhood.
Yes, that wasn't mentioned. They themselves, sometimes they don't recognize the same people, but then after a while they recognize that he has been in there before, and he's never been any much of a nuisance until, I guess, him getting kicked out for rummaging through the magazines kind of triggered him.
And now talk about why you are making the case in your Mondo Weiss article that this incident should not be treated as a hate crime.
For me personally, I come from a public health background. That's my field of studies, community health education, which is a smaller scale, and it's basically improving our communities. And I think one of the major problems that we have is our prisons. Incarceration rates are through the roof. We have very high rates of people being incarcerated. Many of them are people who suffer from mental illness. And the fact that I know for a fact, Jason was in the state prison, in the state hospital, which isn't too far away from where the restaurant is located. And he was released. I don't know how long he spent there. I don't know how long it was since he was released, but I know that he spent some time there, and he didn't get the treatment he needed. And then this incident happened. And so it became more personal for me, because obviously he attacked my family. Mm. And so I feel that it's important to look at where the root cause of this. It's instead of just polarizing something, there's a lot of intersectionalities that occur in a lot of incidents similar to this, and a lot of people who are incarcerated, and what really leads to their incarceration, what leads to the crime that's committed.
Are your parents pressing charges, or do they hope for a different outcome than prison time for this individual?
I'm sorry, you were breaking up.
Are your parents pressing charges, or are they hoping for a different outcome for this individual than prison time?
They're definitely hoping for a better outcome. I know that he's scheduled for arraignment tomorrow morning. My father wasn't sure about the first hearing, and because he was never given an exact time and date. But I found out from another source that there is in fact an arraignment tomorrow, and that there's a possibility that my father will be there and try to lessen the charges on him by speaking out.
For you, what do you think is a better outcome than prison time as far as mental health treatment? And do you think that there's a possibility of that happening in this case?
To be honest with you, I feel like it's not going to happen. I feel that he should have long-term treatment, but the way that everything is set up, that he's not going to get it. He's going to maybe get treated for some point of time, and then maybe when they feel that he's well, he's not going to get that treatment. He's not going to be in a facility or have someone help care for him, because the fact that he is homeless and might not have somebody who does care for him, and the state isn't going to take it upon themselves, that's the sad truth, that I really don't feel optimistic for him.
Well, at a time right now when there really is extreme polarization and Islamophobia going on in this country, it seems like this case is an example of the kind of forgiveness that people can be capable of, your parents and yourself asking for this person to be treated with kindness and dignity instead of being put in prison. And I wonder, I know that I've seen other examples of this, a fellow who, a shop owner who was actually shot in Texas and injured and forgave the person who did that and carried out that attack. And that person who carried out the attack eventually overcame his bigotry by befriending the person that he had shot because of that forgiveness. How do you see this playing into the larger context of what's happening in society right now?
I don't think that if his situation, his mental health didn't have, if there was no mental health, obvious, apparent mental health problem, I think that my feelings would be completely different. I don't feel like I would accept the fact to just turn the other cheek and accept it for what it is and forgive. I feel that there does need to be some responsibility. There does need to be accountability for people who perpetuate this violence and this hate. And it's becoming a bigger problem because I feel a lot of people are becoming more comfortable with allowing hate and allowing the acts like this and thinking that they're going to get a slap on the wrist for it. In no way do I condone any hate against anyone, and I don't think that forgiving, I mean, it does well for the self, but on a larger scale, I don't think that it really helps in deteriorating any other hate crimes that are bound to happen. I feel that there needs to be strict punishment for it. Yet at the same time, there needs to be accountability for everything that is going on and what led to it and how this led to it. It's not an excuse, and it certainly doesn't justify it.
Well, and in the article that you wrote about this incident for Mondo Weiss, you pointed out that you don't want this focus on the mental health situation of this individual to be an excuse for his bigotry necessarily. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that, how you see his mental health issues playing into the bigotry that obviously existed in the statements that he made.
You know, I think that I made that statement because I think too often people with mental health issues there's a stigma to how they act in public or how they act with somebody, and I feel that in a way vilifies them. But I don't think that racism is, or his bigotry is, the illness. There's something else there. There's something that definitely made him act the way he did. But my intention was not to vilify someone who does suffer from mental illness, and assume that just because someone is mentally ill, they're gonna be racist, or they're gonna have some sort of bigotry. Definitely, that was what I was keeping in mind, and not to add on to the stigma that people who suffer from mental illness have to carry a larger burden.
Layla, you, as a student here in Portland, have experienced Islamophobia, and I wonder if you could talk about that as you see it here in Portland, particularly on campuses like Portland State University.
Well, I am very active with Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights, and recently we do a lot of events talking about freedom of Palestine, Palestinians, and asking for basic human rights. Most recently, we passed a boycott, divestment, and sanction divestment bill, and we basically were asking that PSU divest from companies that are complicit in the occupation of Palestine and profit off the violation of human rights. And for that, I was put on a doxing site called Canary Mission. A lot of information was collected on about me and a lot of my comrades and people who worked on this resolution. I was labeled as a terrorist. A lot of that information was collected from my activity at Portland State and my involvement with bettering the campus and making events on campus for the simple fact of being an Arab Muslim who was asking for the basic human rights of other Arab Muslims.
Wow. Wow. Layla, is there something that people can do to help in this situation, or what do you think is the best response for people who want to fight Islamophobia in our communities?
I think you need to definitely reach out to other organizations that are working against Islamophobia. There's a lot of them out there. There are events constantly going on. I think the first step is taking accountability for yourself and the way you see and view things. You see a news report or you see something, I think you should look a little deeper into what's going on. And there's a number of organizations out there right now that are combating Islamophobia. There's a lot of people, you know, we saw a lot of stuff when the first Muslim ban came into place and people were at the airport just showing up. So things like that made a major impact. And I think the first step is just to just get involved. Not live in this bubble that nothing around you is happening, because a lot of the things that I heard from the people in the surrounding area and the people in Salem are saying, well, this doesn't happen here. It does happen here. And the fact that you don't know that it happens here is one of the major problems. If it took something like this to snap you into reality, then you're obviously living in a bubble and you're not connecting with your community members. You're not involved with anyone. You probably haven't crossed a Muslim. Or interacted with one. And I think that's the first step, is the actual stepping out of your own little bubble that you live in.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us your experience and encouraging people to get involved in organizations and in organizing here in Portland and in Salem. Again, we've been speaking with Layla Abdel-Jawad. She is a student activist in Portland and recently wrote the piece in MondoWeiss.net, Victim's Daughter Responds to Anti-Arab Attack in Oregon. I don't want this to be considered a hate crime. This is Jenka Soderberg for KABU Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:58. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
The KABU Community Radio Artists in Residence Program application period is open. Every year, one artist or one collaborative group of artists will be awarded 20 hours of studio recording and production time with a KABU mixologist in order to create a piece of sound art that will be publicly presented at the end of the residency. The Artists in Residence program is open to artists of all disciplines whose project proposals include sound as a major component. Applications for the KBOO 2017 Artists in Residence are due Friday, April 7th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/kboo AIR 2017.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214, unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee meeting has been rescheduled for Monday, March 27th at 4 p.m.
You are listening to a digital indigenous radio show. All across Turtle Island, turn up your radios and decolonize. This is Rose City Native Radio.
Can you tell us an Indian first then?
Hello, Portland. How are you? Spring is here. Happy equinox. Happy belated equinox. We got music, discussion, and more for you today. Stay tuned at 7 for the Indigenous Power Hour mix, an hour-long music mix of your favorite Indigenous tunes.